గౌర భక్తవృందకి గ్రంథరా శ్రీమద్ భాగవతానికి కృతాయ గౌర ప్రేమానందే ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ శ్రీ గురు అండ్ గౌరంగ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదకి ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. హరే కృష్ణ. వి ఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 1 చాప్టర్ 15 టైటిల్ ద పాండవాస్ రిటైర్ టైమ్లీ టెక్స్ట్ 14. యద్ బాంధవ కురుబలాతి మనంత పారం ఏకోరథేన తతరేహమతీర్య సత్వం ప్రత్యాహృతం బహుధనం చ మయా పరేషాం తేజాస్పదం మణిమయం చ హృతం శిరోభ్యా word to word translation responsively. Yad bandhavaha, by whose friendship only, kuru bala abhim, the ocean of the military strength of the kurus, ananda param, which was insurmountable, ekaha, alone, rathena, being seated on the chariot, Tatare was able to cross over. Aham, myself, Atirya, invincible, Satvam, existence, Pratyahritam, drew back, Bahu, very large quantity, Dhanam, wealth, Cha, also, Maya, by might, Paresha, of the enemy, Teja, Padam, source of brilliance, Manimaya, bedecked with jewels, Cha, also, Sritam, taken by force, Shirobhya, from their heads. Translation: the military strength of the Kauravas was like an ocean in which there dwelt many invincible existences, and thus it was insurmountable. But because of his friendship, I, seated on the chariot, was able to cross over it, and only by his grace was I able to regain the cows and also collect by force many helmets of the kings, which were bedecked with jewels that were sources of all brilliance. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. On the Kaurava side, there were many stalwart commanders like Bhishma, Drona, Kripa and Karna, and their military strength was as insurmountable as the great ocean. And yet, it was due to Lord Krishna's grace that Arjuna alone, sitting on the chariot, could manage to vanquish them one after another without difficulty. There were many changes of commanders on the other side, but on the Pandava side, Arjuna alone on the chariot, driven by Lord Krishna, could manage the whole responsibility of the great war. Similarly, when the Pandavas were living at the palace of Virata incognito, the Kauravas picked a quarrel with King Virata and decided to take away his large number of cows. While they were taking away the cows, Arjuna fought with them incognito and was able to regain the cows along with some booty taken by force, the jewels set on the turbans of the royal order. Arjuna remembered that all this was possible by the grace of the Lord.
ओम ज्ञान तीव्रांदस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणाललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पदे गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते। सप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वाञ्छकल्पतरूभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
हरे कृष्णा। Here we can see two battles that happened with the Kauravas and Pandavas. So, one specific mention regarding the cows being protected is with respect to the battle happened when the Pandavas were living incognito in the palace of Virat. So, different Pandavas, they took up different occupations while they were living incognito in the king's palace. As you know, Yudhishthir Maharaj, he was acted as a counselor to the king. And Arjuna, he took the opportunity to use the curse, which was he would become a eunuch, you know, no, not a man nor a woman. So he took that opportunity and he became Brihannala. He became Brihannala. So he tried to teach dance to Uttara. So that was the occupation of Arjuna when he was living in the palace of Virat. And as you know, Bhimasen, you know, he's a big eater and he took the position of the cook. He became Valala, I think, Valala. So he became the Valala and he was the cook and he was cooking for the whole palace. So we can understand he was very strong and he had a very nice appetite, and in fact, in that position, it is very wonderful if someone cooks. He can cook so many preparations. And Bhimasen, he was doing that job. And, you know, others, you know, they were looking after horses, like that. So, the Pandavas, they engaged in these kind of different roles when they were living incognito. And that was the last year of, you know, their exile to the forest. And, of course, Duryodhan and his party, they were trying to capture them, and if they can actually get them during this year, then the Pandavas had to go again to the forest and live another period, so many years again in the forest. So they were trying all their best to catch hold of the Pandavas. So Duryodhan, he got some spies, and in the spies actually gave the news that okay, actually Pandavas are there in the palace of Virat. And then Duryodhan made a plan. So, okay, this is the right time to attack. And he went and he took a very strategic position. That is, they actually stole all the cows. And when all the cows were stolen, then Virat didn't have a strong army to protect. And Arjun, in the form of Brihannala, he took over and he actually went. And all the armies were following him. But primary cause of the defeat of Duryodhan and his party was Arjun himself. So this is the storyline. So here, this storyline is narrated by Arjun. Because Arjun has returned to Hastinapur. And there, his brother Yudhishthir Maharaj is there. And previous chapters we could see how Yudhishthir Maharaj perceived so many bad omens, And he could understand there was something has gone wrong, and Krishna must have left this material world. So now Arjuna is confirming that in fact the Lord has gone to his spiritual abode. Now all these verses are verses of separation. In these verses, Arjuna is expressing his heart. His friend, his dearmost friend, practically speaking, he spent almost all his life with Krishna. And Krishna was his the most best friend. And during the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna and Arjuna were together. Even before, Krishna and Arjuna were together. So the example is given of Arjuna as one of the best sakhas of Krishna. So this is the position of Arjuna. And now Arjuna understood that the Lord has departed. So we know in Bhagavad Gita, you know, the intimate relation, you know, Sakheti Matva Prasavam Yaduktam, Hey Krishna, Hey Yadava, Hey Sakheti, Ajanata Mahimanam Tavedam, Maya Pramata Pranayana Vapi. So Krishna says, Arjuna says in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that, you know, when he saw the Vishwaroop, he saw, okay, I have actually my relation with you as just as a friend. Sakheti Matva, I considered you as a Sakha. That's it, my friend, my mate, that's it. Prasavam Yaduktam, I said so many things to you. Hey Krishna, I address you. I never address you as, you know, Supreme Lord, the master of all the universes. No, I never address you as the Supreme Lord, but I just address you as a friend. Hey Yadav. You know, Hey Yadav, this is the way Arjuna used to address Krishna. Hey Yadava. Hey Sakha, oh my dear friend. So now we can see the Lord, that dear friend, has departed, and Arjuna is glorifying Krishna, remembering his pastimes. So, in the spiritual context, we have to understand this is remembrance of Krishna in separation. So in that separation, in ecstatic emotions, Arjuna is remembering Krishna. So we cannot compare this to separation in the material existence, because the separation is there in the spiritual existence as well as in our day-to-day material affairs. So the spiritual separation is bringing forth happiness. It is part of the spiritual ecstasy. Even though Arjuna is morose, he is completely sad and he is completely devastated, still that is the sign of ecstasy. It is a sign of spiritual ecstasy. Whereas the separation in the material plane is simply painful. There is no real happiness in the material plane. We know in our family situation, if one of our near and dear passes away, the whole family is completely unhappy. They are actually devastated. They don't know what to do. The life is not the same. The life is something different. You know, one spouse passes away, or, you know, parents or own children or the close relatives, that separation is causing so much of pain. You know, we all have, in one way or the other way, that experience. Or at least we have seen someone who, you know, whose dear friend or anyone has departed. And especially if it is untimely. There is a lot of separation and there is a lot of pain. And there is no ecstasy. It is not ecstasy. It is just pain. There is material pangs. It's just separation. And it is causing so much of distress in the whole community and even family. In fact, I was in the retreat, and regarding this point, His Holiness Devamata Swami Maharaj, he was making a point that in the Western culture, there is so much of havoc, so much of problems because of unsteady relationship. You know, the relationship which doesn't prolong. It is just for a week, for a night, or for a few months, or, you know, maybe a couple of years. There is a lot of problems in the relationship and the interaction between the opposite sex. So much of problems that is causing. And that is creating so much of problems individually, collectively, and, you know, as a society, as a whole. So he was making a point that in the Indian families, most of the time the problems or the pain is felt due to death. So death actually crumbles the whole thing. The whole scene is changed. It is not same anymore. So that is material existence. So in material existence, even the tight relationships causes so much of pain. It causes happiness, material happiness, and also it can cause suffering. Even in the Western world, I have seen tight relationships. Last month I was on books and I met one family, and they were the Aboriginal family. So I started speaking to them. There were a few ladies and, you know, a few kids, and it's a big family. So first of all, I was surprised to see a big family. And they were together, and I stopped them, you know, started speaking to them. So they said, we are from some other part, said, we are near Adelaide. We are from Port Augusta. So I said, yeah, I also know someone from Port Augusta in the temple. So there are some devotees, our senior devotees, someone is there from that side of Australia. So they started speaking and then started explaining about karma. So few ladies were there, so started explaining about karma. And they took some interest, they listened. And when it came to the decision point, that is, okay, they have to take this book. And, you know, they had, I said, you know, you can accept this book and please help us with a donation. So that we can cover the print cost, and, you know, we are monks working on charity. So when I explained that, when it came to the decision point, the whole family pointed to the eldest lady there, the oldest lady there. So she was the decision maker. So everyone said, you know, she has to make the decision. You know, her name was Jane or someone. So Jane, what do you think? You know, so everyone was pointing to her. And when it came to the donation, money itself, few of them gave money. But the decision point was one single person. So we can see, even here we can see there are families with such a tight bondage. However, since it is a material bondage, it is a material relation, that tight relation can, of course, bring some material happiness. And on the other side, the separation by death or other means could give so much of suffering. So this is the difference between the material existence and the spiritual existence. So the similar examples we could find in Srimad Bhagavatam. So here, these are songs of separation of Arjun. Similarly, if we move ahead, in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we can see the remembrance of Krishna by Uddhava. He is speaking to Vidura and he is actually recollecting Krishna's pastimes. Exactly in the two chapters in the beginning of third canto are dedicated to Krishna's pastimes in summary. The first chapter explains Krishna in Vrindavan, and the second one, Krishna in Mathura and Dwarka. So just each verse is narrating how wonderfully Krishna enacted his pastimes. So there again, it is mentioned in the purports of Srila Prabhupada that Uddhava, as he was speaking, as he was remembering and speaking Krishna's pastimes in a summary format, he was going deeper and deeper into ecstasy, into the spiritual ecstasy. So here also Arjun is in spiritual ecstasy, but the ecstasy of separation. Whereas Uddhava, in the same point, he was remembering the pastimes of Krishna and he was also going deep into the ecstasy. The similar pastimes, in the pastime in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Uddhava also remembers. He says, you know, Parthastra Puta Padamapurasya. He remembers about Krishna and Arjun together on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, how they were fighting, how they were defeating all the soldiers and all the great Maharathis. And Uddhava mentions that Parthastra Puta Padamapurasya. Ultimately, just by getting pierced by the arrows of Arjun, all the soldiers, they were getting purified and they were going back to Godhead. According to the mood, some of them, they go to the heavenly planet, some of them to the Brahma Jyoti, some to the spiritual world. So according to their relationship with Krishna and how they looked upon Krishna, in hatred, in neutrality or in friendship, depending on that, further purification happened by Arjun's arrows. So Uddhava says, the arrows of Arjun were the preaching tools, actually, in one sense. With the books we give, it is actually purifying people. Srila Prabhupada said, if one touches Bhagavad Gita when we distribute, they will get a human form of life because they get purified of their karma. In the same way, here, even though it is quite painful, we can think about shooting arrows and just piercing our chest, how painful it would be. But that was purifying, and they get Padam Aparasya. They received Padam. They got the Parampadam depending on their position, depending on their relationship. So This is the power of separation. The power of separation is bringing spiritual happiness. And ultimately, Bhagavatam gives the separation of gopis. So, whole 31st chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, it is songs of separation of gopis, the whole 20 verses. They are remembering Krishna. They are going through different pastimes of Krishna. They are remembering his pastime. They are remembering his playing upon the flute. And after that, they are enacting the pastimes of Krishna. They are acting like Krishna. They are just walking like Krishna. They are talking like Krishna. And one gopi would act as a demon, and one gopi would act as Krishna, and the whole pastime would enact in the forest of Vrindavan. So this is separation. So this separation is bringing spiritual bliss. So when we see these verses, we cannot see them on a material plane, where now just Krishna has left Arjun and all the Pandavas, and they have just gone, and Krishna has just gone, and now simply they are in pain, just like we are in pain of separation. No, this is completely on the spiritual plane, on the transcendental plane. So this separation was perfectly enacted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to show the separation of gopis, and especially Srimati Radharani, with Krishna. So enacted all the pastimes to give us a picture of what is the potency of separation from Krishna. So as it is mentioned, the mission statement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is a verse composed by Srila Rupa Goswami. He says, Anarpita charim chira karunaya avatirna kalo samarpayitam unnato jalarasam sa bhakti shriyam. So he said, the Lord, out of compassion, has manifested in this material world, and especially in this age of Kali. And for what purpose? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to samarpayitam, to give something which is to give something which has practically never been bestowed upon the living entities. That is Unnata Ujjala Rasam. Unnata means the highest. Ujjala Rasa means the rasa, the mellow of conjugal relationship. Unnata Ujjala Rasam Sva Bhakti Shriyam. In the form of Sva Bhakti. Bhakti, the devotion unto himself. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is Krishna. He is Radha and Krishna combined. So, that is the whole purpose, the mission statement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he enacted the pastimes of separation from Krishna. So especially in the Antilila of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can see chapter after chapter, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in separation of Krishna. And towards the 17th chapter, is giving the pastime where Mahaprabhu was in Gambhira. If you go to Jagannath Puri, if you go to the temple, near temple, maybe 5-10 minutes walk, there is a room where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed. He's 24 years. So, Mahaprabhu lived for 48 years, and of which the 24 years he stayed in Jagannath Puri. And of which 6 years he traveled and preached throughout South India and throughout India. And when he lived in Gambhira, it's a small room. If you go and see, you can see still there are padukas of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is covered with sandalwood paste. We can see that. And his room is preserved as it is. It's very, very wonderful. And there, Mahaprabhu, we can see such a small room, and we would wonder how a 7 feet tall, the Lord, how can he manage? And he was perfectly showing an example of a renunciant, of a sannyasi. So he was staying there, and he was actually exemplifying as a nyasi shiromani, as a perfect of sannyasis. So one night, as it is given in the 17th chapter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Lord, he was feeling so much of separation from the Lord, and the whole room was completely locked. And Swarup Damodar Goswami and Ramananda Roy, they were sitting outside the Gambhira room, and they were just safeguarding the Lord. And Mahaprabhu, out of separation, he was just constantly chanting Krishna's names throughout the night. And it is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita that at one point he disappeared from his room, and all the doors were locked, All the three sides there were kind of locked, the doors. All three were locked, and other side was just a wall. And suddenly the chanting stopped, and his associates, Sarva Damodar and Ramanandra, they couldn't find Mahaprabhu at all. And they were completely bewildered. Where is Mahaprabhu gone? So it is mentioned that Mahaprabhu jumped into the ocean, because Jagannath Puri, it is ocean side. So he jumped into the ocean thinking as Yamuna. So this is ecstasy in separation. That is, in the highest level, even seeing the ocean, he just jumped and he was thinking about Yamuna. And then it is mentioned in that position, you know, he was actually seeing all the pastimes of Krishna and Radharani with all the gopis in the waters of Yamuna. So Swarup Damodar Goswami and Ramananda Roy, they got hold of all the devotees and they were searching after Mahaprabhu. They were completely bewildered and they were completely sad. What happened to Mahaprabhu? They were going here and there. They went to the south side of the Srimad Dwar. They went to the north side of the Srimad Dwar. They couldn't find. Finally, they were thinking, has Mahaprabhu gone to Chatak Parvat or has he gone to Konark? Where has he gone? So they were looking. They were searching. And finally, they walked on the shore towards Konark. Konark, you know, the Surya Kshetra is there, the temple of Surya. So they were walking towards Konark temple, and suddenly they saw a fisherman coming. And the fishermanhe had all the Ashta, you know, Sattvika Bhavas. He had all the spiritual ecstasies manifested. He was crying. He was perspiring. He was jumping and dancing. He was calling out Krishna's names. He was doing everything. And seeing this, Swarup Damodar Goswami, he was a bit astonished, because he is a pure devotee and he knows the whole about the devotion service. And he knows all about the mellows in devotion service. So seeing this fisherman, he asked, what happened to you? Did you find a person, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, walking through this way? Have you met him? Or why are you in this condition? So this fisherman, he said, no, I actually found a ghost. I was in the ocean and I was throwing my net, and in my net I found one big fish, I thought. But when I actually caught hold of him and had a look, it was a ghost. And how I confirmed he was a ghost? Because when I touched, the ghost entered my body and I started crying. And my heart became completely affected. And I started dancing and singing. I don't know what happened to me. And in fact, I am looking for someone who can remove this ghost from my body. So, hearing this, Swarup Damodar Goswami, he confirmed, yes, this is no one other than Mahaprabhu himself. And he said, okay, if you want someone to remove a ghost, I am ready. I'm actually expert in that. What he did, actually the fisherman said one more thing. He said, I thought if I have been attacked by ghosts, then I could chant Narasimha prayers. Then the ghost should disappear. But in this case, I chanted Narasimha prayers and suddenly the strength of the ghost doubled. So when he heard this, then Swarup Damodar Goswami understood, this is no one other than Srimad Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. So he said, I have the mantra to remove this ghost. So first he touched on this fisherman's head and chanted some mantras. And after that, three times he slapped on the face. 1, 2, 3. After that, the fisherman, he actually came to normal peace. And he said, oh yeah, I'm feeling a bit better. He said, okay, all of us, let's go to see Mahaprabhu. So he said to the fisherman, look, that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So fisherman said, no, I have seen Mahaprabhu so many times. He's walking so nicely, he's dancing so nicely. This is not Mahaprabhu. He said, no, it is Mahaprabhu. Out of ecstasy, his form has been changed. Then they went and they saw Mahaprabhu. He was lying down. All his body was completely deformed. All the joints were elongated. And the skin became so soft, and the joints were separated, so his body became something else. And all were completely worried what would happen to Mahaprabhu. So then it was impossible for them to carry the Lord to his room, because his body was in such a fragile kind of a deformed position, no one could actually carry. So they decided, okay, they would chant. They cleaned the body of the Lord, which was completely covered with sand, and changed his clothes, and all of them chanted Hare Krishna Mahamantra very loudly. And after some time, the Lord came to external consciousness. It is mentioned, the Lord had three kinds of consciousness. One is the internal consciousness, and one is the external consciousness, and one is in between. Neither internal nor external. It goes to external and internal. So it is in between. So the Lord manifested this in-between consciousness, and then finally he came to external consciousness. Then Mahaprabhu asked, he was completely astonished, what happened to me? Why am I here? I was watching the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So here we can see, in separation of Krishna, Mahaprabhu was actually watching all the pastimes of Krishna, Radharani and all the gopis in Yamuna. So he was seeing how they were playing, and after that how they came out, how they dressed, and how they were going to Kunja, and how they were preparing to eat something, different kinds of fruits. So he was observing everything, and at that point he said, there was this tumultuous sound or this chanting. So I came to this external consciousness. He said, I have lost Krishna, and where is Krishna? So this is the topmost separation of Radharani from Krishna, which has been enacted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So even though Mahaprabhu is in separation and is crying, that is the tears of joy in one sense. Because in separation, actually, the actual pastimes have been manifested in his heart. And he was observing all the pastimes. So the separation is such a powerful thing that the reality of Krishna's pastime could be enacted in that separation. So that is the potency of separation. So now it comes to the point that many people could wonder, was it this observation? In this point has been discussed by Devamrita Maharaj when we were in the retreat. That is one interesting point, is the subjective observation and the objective observation. So usually even one person was asking me, I think in Urban Yoga we were giving a lecture, how could we judge when somebody is advanced in spirituality? Because it is a subjective experience. That is the common argument that we have. That is, spirituality means it is a subjective experience. So how could one tell one is really spiritual, one is really advanced in spiritual consciousness, and one who is not? Because many people in this world, they are making a show of it. So the question comes, whether Krishna consciousness or the Krishna conscious experience, is it just subjective or is it objective? Because the scientific world do not believe in any subjective experiences. Everything has to be objective. So the point is, yes, in terms of analyzing a devotee's position, it is an objective stand. It's an objective stand. Because we can see in Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, the last section of Bhagavad Gita is speaking about the characteristics of a yogi, a characteristics of a devotee, Siddha Pragya Muni. The whole description is given, the characteristics of such a devotee. As Arjun asks, Siddha Pragya Ka Pasha Samadhi Dasasya Keshava. So in that verse, it is very nicely mentioned, okay, how he talks, how he walks, how he sleeps, how he eats. So these questions are given, and in answer, Krishna gives many wonderful verses, not just one or two verses, there are a series of verses. So that is showing that it is possible to understand who is advanced spiritually by different symptoms. Just like in the scientific world, one could understand what is correct or what is not correct objectively. In the same way, it is possible even in Krishna consciousness to understand what is object, what is real, by objective observation on one level. However, when we come to the subjective and objective understanding in terms of Mahaprabhu, it is going beyond the normal objective experience, because it is coming to the objectivity which is based on consciousness. So I on one level we could think that Mahaprabhu was making a mistake by seeing Yamuna in the ocean in Jagannath Puri. But was it a mistake? But no, actually it is a fact. So on the level, on the consciousness of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is acting as Srimati Radharani, so that for him, seeing that ocean or misunderstanding ocean to Yamuna, it's actually the reality. So in his consciousness, it is the reality. And for him, observing all the pastime, it is the reality. So it is not something which is projected, or it is something which is, you know, just seen or imagined or dreamt about, that we do usually. So that is actually the reality. So here, Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita is presenting something which is actually beyond our normal objective vision based on our senses or our material mind, but that which is completely based on spiritual consciousness. So that is one aspect, as we see the separation and the power of separation and how the reality is perceived in separation, and how the spiritual separation is ecstasy rather than material pain. And another point we can see in this verses, and here we can see that Arjun is pointing out a very, very important aspect of our devotional life, which is, he is showing that he is completely dependent on Krishna. He's mentioning, yes, I have defeated all these Kaurava armies. We can see two times at least. One is when they were in incognito in the king of Virat, and also we can see in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. But he's saying he was able to achieve all this only by the strength and mercy of Krishna himself, who was his friend and who acted as the chariot driver. So here, this is the mood of a devotee. And Arjun is showing, exemplifying the mood of a devotee, that is complete dependence on Krishna. So here, we have to understand very well that even though a devotee is completely dependent on Krishna, still he acts. People say, I am completely helpless. I am so fallen, so I can't chant my rounds. I am so fallen, so I can't get up for Mangalarati. I am so fallen, so that I don't have any time to read Srila Prabhupada's books. So this is actually fallacy. This is not humility. This is not actually one is feeling that one is really fallen. This is just an excuse. So we have to actually get beyond that kind of consciousness. We have to understand what is actually real helplessness. Because Srila Prabhupada says, when we chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one has to chant as if a kid, a child is crying out for mother's help. So it is a chanting with the mood of helplessness. So when we chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we have to imbibe this mood. So when we have to do service, we have to imbibe this mood. So we feel ourselves not qualified, we feel ourselves helpless, but at the same time, we are ready to endeavor for Krishna's pleasure. So this is very, very, very significant point. That is, we are not actually separating endeavor from this. We have to understand very clearly that even though we are not qualified, even though we have difficulties, still we have to put our effort in Krishna's service. And at the same time, when we have the result, or when we see some positive results coming through, we have to understand. Or if it is negative, still we have to understand, it is just because of Krishna's mercy. So in either way, we have to see Krishna's hand. So here, Arjun is showing, exemplifying that point, that okay, I have done all these things, I have done so many great feats, but only by the mercy of Krishna. So in this chapter, we can see further that, as Arjun pointing out, that when Krishna left, he lost all the powers. Because Krishna wanted Arjuna to lose the powers. And when Yudhishthir understood the fact that Krishna had left this planet, he took the same opportunity. He didn't further try to enjoy the kingdom. Rather, he took the opportunity to retire timely. So this chapter is titled "The Pandavas Retire Timely." So when the time comes, one has to retire. So the Pandavas are showing this point. So the Lord is giving the direct indication. And as devotees, and here they are pure devotees, so they could readily understand, okay, this is the right time to go and serve Krishna somewhere else, because they are eternal associates of Krishna, and wherever they go, the Pandavas, they follow Krishna. So Krishna may go to different universes and enact different pastimes, and Pandavas in different capacities they serve Krishna. So as it is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he mentioned in the fourth chapter, yes, millions of years back, when I spoke this Bhagavad Gita or this knowledge, you were there but in a different capacity. So it is mentioned Arjuna was there in a different capacity. We can see in the expansion of Nara and Narayan, Arjuna and Krishna are together. So the Pandavas would serve Krishna in different capacities according to the time, place and circumstances. So here we had to understand this mood of dependence. So many prayers, as we can see in Srimad Bhagavatam, exemplifies the mood of dependence. So I was recently reading in the third canto of the prayers of the child within the womb. That is actually a prayer of dependence on Krishna and a prayer of helplessness, showing now I am in this position, now I can't do anything, I need your help. And when we do our devotional service, when we chant, we have to imbibe this mood. That is endeavoring in the mood of dependence, and that to complete dependence on Krishna. And with that, our consciousness will become proper, and then we can actually properly do our service and we can make spiritual progress. So with this, I stop here and see, is there any comments, questions or corrections? Thank you. Yes,
Prabhu. Prabhu, I asked this question in a very moment, and still I didn't get an answer. Pandavas were left behind by Krishna when he went there, but the Yadu dynasty was taken. So Pandavas are as close as the Yadu dynasty to Krishna. Why would Krishna leave them behind?
There are the Lord's pastimes has different meaning. So as we know in the Maushala Leela, where Krishna left this material world, there are few reasons which are given why he took the Yadu dynasty. One is they fought because there were no one in this earthly planet who could actually defeat them or to kill them, because the Lord wanted everyone to go back, and ultimately the Lord wanted everyone to join his pastime. So that was one reason they fought, and finally they went along with Krishna. So the only thing I can think about is specifically why Pandavas were left behind, they are actually teaching us a very important lesson. In the specific chapter, as the verse progress, there is a very very important lesson that Arjuna is imparting to us. So all these verses where Arjuna is actually lamenting, and he is calling out for Krishna in separation, remembering his pastimes, and Arjuna comes upon a position where again he is bewildered. Just like he was bewildered on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, here again Arjuna is bewildered. And now when Arjuna is bewildered, Krishna is not present, correct? Because Krishna is already gone. So there is a beautiful verse. I will not go to that verse, but the essence of that verse is that even though Krishna is gone, he has imparted his instructions in the form of Bhagavad Gita. And there it is given that Arjuna is actually remembering Bhagavad Gita, the instructions imparted by Krishna, and he is actually coming back to his original position. He is actually getting out of his morose position. And you know, he's carrying on with his duties in Krishna consciousness. So it is actually showing, it is teaching a very important lesson for us, that it is not necessary the presence of Lord Krishna, rather his instructions are as good as Krishna himself. That is the teachings of Srila Prabhupada also. Because when Prabhupada was asked this question, that what will happen to your disciples, your followers, when you depart from this world, that immediately it is mentioned. I was recently watching a video following Srila Prabhupada. So immediately. I think it was Charu Prabhu. Charu Prabhu, who is the temple, he came here, he's a temple person of Utah, Hare Krishna temple. So Charu Prabhu, he was saying, just like a lightning, the question came immediately. Srila Prabhupada said, I will not die. I live forever in my instructions. So that is very, very significant point. So that is one lesson we could see. And of course, we can see other lessons that, okay, the Lord is actually showing the mercy to Pandavas, showing them that, okay, this is the time to retire. And it's setting an example of retirement of these great devotees. They could have enjoyed in one sense, or even they could have ruled over this world. They didn't rule over for a long time. But it was time, say, they manifested perfect detachment. And they left. They left behind everything and made Maharaj Parikshit as the emperor and just left behind. So we can see different instructions, different teachings. The Lord is imparting through these Pandavas who are left behind. Then ultimately, as we understand, they have to, of course, join Krishna's party because that is the eternal position. So they do continue. So these are different thoughts. If someone else have more points, could please add to this. Chandra Prabhuji, would you like to add any points to this?
I was just thinking, Krishna's mission statement also, so he did all these things to put them into the room.
Yeah.
So he doesn't want to just Krishna disappears. He just wants Parikshit Maharaj and all others to continue the thing. So he wants to give some time for the... And the other thing was different.
That's a different thing.
Srila Prabhupada was saying they were becoming so powerful, then nobody could be defeated. So that is why he had to personally... Yeah. Get rid of them in one sense. So for the Pandavas were not like that. Even in that situation, they were not puffed up or anything. So there is no immediate need to remove them from the scene.
Thank you, Prabhu. Is that clarified?
But the point is that Krishna took the emperors not because they were puffed up, but because they were dissolved.
There are multiple reasons actually. In some it is mentioned that some of them were actually demigods who actually took part in the Leela. So it is also mentioned, it is not that Krishna took everyone. So some had different destinations. So that is also mentioned. So it's a combination of reasons.
Because Narada Muni, if you go to the previous chapter, he comes to this time, he indicates that he lived only up till the time when Krishna is on the time.
You?
Because Narada in the previous chapter, when he visits Yudhishthira Maharaj, he gives an indication to Yudhishthira Maharaj that you can rule the world until Krishna is on the planet.
It's true, right? That's true, right? That's what is happening. Yeah. So, you know, it's just that we shouldn't worry too much about a small time gap. One was kind of immediate. Then you could say, even Yadavas, did they go along with Krishna? No. Yadavas, they departed. And after that, there is a whole pastime how Krishna departed from this world. It's right, it was not instantaneous. The Yadavas departing and Krishna departing. It's two different instances, actually, if you read Bhagavatam.
Right? Uddhava didn't go.
Uddhava didn't go. Because Uddhava had a mission. What was Uddhava's mission? Because the sages of Badrikashram, they couldn't get the direct audience of Krishna, even though Krishna had enacted all the pastimes in Vrindavan, in Mathura, in Dwaraka, but they missed out. They were worshipping the Lord in Badrikashram and they couldn't hear anything and they couldn't actually get the instructions of Krishna. So Krishna wanted Uddhava to take sannyas and go all the way up to Badrikashram and instruct them on the teachings of Krishna. In one sense, even if you say that it was not instantaneous, that is, Yadavas left and along with Krishna left. No, that's also after some time. In terms of time, if you are just speaking about the material time, yes, there was a time gap there also. Krishna left afterwards because then you know how Satyaki was there, he was sitting under the banyan tree and the arrows, the whole pastime. So there was a time gap. This is a little bit more time gap, but again, it is insignificant because as soon as they came to know, Yudhishthira Maharaj came to know the departure of Krishna, he made his plans how to go. So these are Leela, so we cannot just see on a material plane. So we have to see ultimately the plan of Krishna. And Krishna is trying to teach us because the entire idea of all these leelas are ultimately to attract the living entities and also give us instructions so that we can apply it in our normal life. So we have to get the instructive points from this. Any further points, questions, anything? Okay. Yes, Mother, sorry. The Bhagavad Gita? Or here this time? Or? Bhagavad Gita. Okay. I cannot say the specific answer, is there any specific answer, but we can see in terms of relation, who was the most closest to Krishna? Arjuna. By age, okay, they were friends, yeah, that's right, they were of the same age. So, the Sakhirasa, so there is a difference in Sakhirasa also, it was Sakhirasa, we often give the example of Arjuna in Sakhirasa. But there are more intimate Sakhirasa in Vrindavan, where, you know, they are fighting and, you know, jumping over Krishna. So there is a different moods even in Sakhirasa. But in terms of Pandavas, the most intimate relation we can see is between Arjun and Krishna, because they were friends of the equal level. They considered equal level. So in that friendship, we can understand Krishna imparted this knowledge. And also, so it is a pastime. Only reason I can see is that intimacy in relationship. That is the main reason I can see. Intimacy in relationship. And also, there is another reason is that even though all the Pandavas were great, who was the best of the warriors in Pandavas? Arjun is known for his, you know, his fighting with the bow and arrow. So even that Arjun, and in fact the Kaurava army were afraid of two people. One primarily Arjun and Bhimasena. And of which Arjun is known for his, you know, he had so many different arrows and he had so much of power. And he had accrued so many different kinds of arrows from different demigods during, you know, his travel in the forest and, you know, from demigods, so many things. So he had a series of so much of power with him. So even then Arjun, he got bewildered in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So when we understand even that he was the greatest of the warriors, even he got bewildered in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and Krishna's instructions in the form of Bhagavad Gita helped him to revive and come to his actual state, and he could actually fight the wars, then we can understand the potency of Bhagavad Gita even more. In one sense, it actually shows that how significant is the instruction of Krishna. So that is another reason I can think, that is Arjun was the most powerful, but he went to the, you know, most difficult situation, and Krishna's instruction helped. So that also shows that actually add value to Bhagavad Gita in one sense, when you see from a normal perspective for the normal people. These are a few things I can think about. There could be more reasons, you know, we can. Yes, Madhuri.
Also, Krishna says himself,
yes.
He himself is telling that.
Yeah.
That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you,
yeah,
because you are my devotee. And so
yeah,
he himself is telling why he chose Arjuna to give this, yeah, knowledge.
That's a very wonderful reference, that is. Yeah, yes.
Also Srila Prabhupada says, when Krishna meets Yudhishthira Maharaj, he bows down.
Yes.
Because of the etiquette. Because he's the elder. And also Bhimasena also is a kind of a similar type of,
yes,
relationship. Or little, but Arjuna is the one who is like a more kind of Sakha and that type of relationship, as explained.
Yeah.
So he's the,
yeah,
Bhaktosi,
yeah,
Sahasa. So that fits Arjuna's will directly with Yudhishthira Maharaj.
Yeah. Also I was thinking that intimacy in relationship between Arjuna and Krishna are so strong that as it is given even Naranara and they are together. Because even in Badrikashram, still Nara and Narayana are there. Narayan is Krishna himself and Nara is Arjun. So even in different pastimes, they are together and that intimate relationship is so strong. So we can see a few reasons like that. Is that fine? Any further? Yes, Madhu.
The reason what Madhu is asking, you are saying that sure whenever any reference of Sakyan is given, Arjuna is talking. Even in the nine processes of devotional service, every personality is mentioned who perfectly realized through the system for Sakyan is Arjuna. But just now you mentioned that in Vrindavan, the devotee, like the friends of Krishna, have much more intimate relationship with Krishna.
Yeah.
They are not even aware that he's the Supreme Lord, but they know that he's the Supreme Lord.
Arjuna's friendship is again Sakyam. Sakyam, there is no question that it is not Sakyam, but Sakyam is again classified in different levels. That is, Sakyam in one level is friendship in which somebody is junior to Krishna. So the junior, he has friendship with Krishna, but at the same time there is a tiny mix of awe and reverence. So that is one kind of Sakyam. Then another kind of Sakyam is where it is only exactly on the equal level. They are just like friendship. Everything is friendship, so we cannot say, you know, even though a tiny mix of that awe and reverence, there could be a tiny bit of that superiority, there still it is friendship. Then the next level is where it is just equal, and the next one is the devotee is a tiny superior than Krishna. So there is a kind of a parental kind of an affection, that affection of, you know, I am superior, so I have to protect, that kind of feeling. That is also there in that friendship. So even, you know, Balaram, he is a friend of Krishna, but at the same time he is superior too. So in that relationship, you know, because Balaram serves in all different rasas, that's a different story. So even that, okay, I am superior, but he is my friend. So the Sakya itself has different varieties. So even though we say the example, yes, Arjun's example is given, because Arjun is acting as one of the residents, apparently as one of the residents of the material world. Right? Because he's, you know, he's born in the age of the Pandavas and he's living a life. So when we talk about this kind of perfection, you know, we just get to took the example of Arjun. So I don't think is there anything wrong in it as such. Of course, there are unlimited examples. If you talk about Sakya, you know, there are unlimited examples, because Goloka Vrindavan, there are unlimited sakhas of Krishna. So specifically, what I can understand, okay, is a man, you know, apparently born in the material world, and then he's shown an example of perfection. So it doesn't say that, you know, he's superior than anyone else in Vrindavan or inferior, because there are different forms of friendship. An example, that's right. So even in other relationship also, we give different examples, but it doesn't mean that they are the only personalities who perform that particular kind of devotion service among the Navanga Bhakti. You know, even if you say, who was offering prayers? Prudha Maharaj, right? Prudha Maharaj, you know, so, you know, Bhagavatam is full of prayers. So, you know, all these prayers are prayers of perfection. These are all prayers in perfection state, as we can see, most of them. So, there are many examples, but a key one is often presented as, you know, as the one we can actually follow or to look up to. So, I think even it helps a lot for devotees to see the example of Arjun, even in our personal life. That is, Arjun is like a working man, you know, who has so much of responsibilities and who is completely bewildered. And Bhagavad Gita is helping directly bring him back to his original consciousness. So in the same way, we can more and more relate to Arjun. So even when we are preaching to new people, still we take the example of Arjun, right? Because everyone can relate to Arjun. So it doesn't put down any other relationship. So, you know, there are so many millions or, you know, unlimited relationships in such. Anything further? Is that okay? Okay, please.
So just an extension of the
yes, sure.
Point. Then we understand that the Navabhita Bhakti process is primarily given from the Sadhana Bhakti point of
view. Yeah, that's a good point.
Whereas when we talk about spontaneity and that is a different dimension of
devotion. Yes.
So
yeah, that's a very, very nice point, because we are. Yeah, the answer what one Jagannath Ram Prabhu was mentioning is a wonderful point. That is, the Navavidha Bhakti, the nine items of devotion service, the nine processes of devotion service, that is from the perspective of Sadhana Bhakti. So which are the processes through which one can actually or one can serve the Lord. So yes, that is a nice example too. So yeah, generally what that which we can relate to in our, yeah, the spontaneity is not mentioned so much. Even when we come to, of course, Lakshmi Devi is given as the Pala Sevana, so, but still the mood of awe and reverence is very strong, so one can relate to. Thank you very much. Granthashimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.